Hi, my name is Brandon Sparks, and this is the first episode of a podcast called Cine Nation. It's presented to you by The Media Machine. I'm Brandon Sparks. I am living in Los Angeles, and I go to film school at an MFA program here, and I'm joined by Ben Gertz.
Ben Gertz. I'm in Portland, Oregon, so representing on the West Coast here.
Yeah, and Ben and I, we're from Alabama, and we worked together in Alabama for a little while, and we have just moved to the West Coast, different places, but we moved to the West Coast for certain things, and we've known each other for a while, and we've worked together in film before, and so I decided to do this podcast, and I thought Ben would be a perfect choice for it, and we plan to bring in more people to talk about certain topics, and so yeah, it's hopefully you guys enjoy the show. Go ahead.
I'm gonna make my sales pitch briefly for the show to you, Brandon.
Okay. Ready? Yeah,
this is why I agreed to do the show.
Okay. Why?
I think it's interesting because you know you're in LA, you've got the Hollywood perspective.
Yeah.
I'm also in a film. Portland has some film, and Seattle has some film going on.
Yeah.
But because we're from Alabama, and a lot of the people we hope to interview, Alabama, Nashville, Atlanta, Louisiana, NYU, you know, all these different places across the country.
Yeah.
It's really a chance to talk with people who are, you know, at more of an up and coming level, I guess,
yeah.
Right? There's a ton of podcasts that cover what it's like to be
in the industry.
Know, David Good.
Yeah. Be the top dog or
right.
Making big money.
And, you know, to me, it's much more interesting to look at it from the perspective of if you're trying to get into the business or you're in the business and you're trying to move your way up, what are you doing? How does it work? What's it like in Portland? What's it like in Nashville? What's it like in all these different markets? And kind of also, you know, what we're really talking about with this episode is, you know, the future of how technology and the industry is changing, basically, to affect the way that we tell stories and all that. So I think it's going to be good. I'm excited. I don't want to get people too hyped up, but let's just say it's going
to
be good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's exciting for me to do this. So right now, as we're talking about, the Adam Sandler deal is really the biggest thing. And basically what we've been kind of looking at with a whole bunch of articles and researching Netflix is how this affects the industry. Because Netflix is becoming so powerful in this industry, they're able to produce exclusive content. So, like, Ben, go ahead, because I know you have some stuff to say on how you feel about what they're doing with their exclusive content.
Well, I don't know about my feelings. I'm curious about it because it's a departure from the way that a lot of the studios currently operate, you know? So what they're... I mean, their closest competitor that Netflix wants to be compared to is HBO, and HBO doesn't like that comparison, but it's worked because, you know, Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, had a great line earlier in the year that we'll link to in the show notes where he said, you know, our goal is to become HBO faster than HBO can become us, right? Mm-hmm. And so they have similar... structures of having exclusive content that people pay a monthly subscription for, and slowly over time, you know, HBO has sold its back catalog, through DVDs eventually or iTunes, and then, you know, recently with the deal with Amazon to have some stuff streaming through them. But, you know, the key difference is that HBO is tied to, I mean, they're owned by Time Warner, you know, so they have this legacy connection to the status quo, to the system as it is. And so, you know, clearly the biggest thing that everyone who wishes they had HBO is, you know, I want to just subscribe directly without a cable subscription, right? You cannot get HBO without a cable subscription.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, Netflix can just go straight and say, here, $8 a month.
Yeah.
It's $8 a month, right? It's cheap. Yeah. It's super cheap.
Yeah, and then you get the first month's free. So if you don't like it, you just get rid of it.
Right. Well, and that's actually one of the things that I was looking at earlier is the Netflix investor information. And We can, for any, I don't know how nerdy this is. I feel pretty nerdy when I'm like reading through this stuff, but, you know, what they have, investor questions or common investor questions. And one of them was, you know, how valuable are these original shows? How many new subscribers do you really get from doing these?
Yeah.
You know, is it worth it? Right.
Yeah.
And so they're pretty, hush about exact numbers, like tied to, you know, because they can't necessarily tie it to particular shows, but they do tie it to quarters, you know, and so they, when they launch a new show, they can say, okay, we gained X number of subscribers over this time period. So right now they're up to 50 million subscribers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's globally. Worldwide. Yeah. And I think it was 40 million last year. So it's gone up 10 million in a year. And we were talking about with the quarters and how they don't release their data or like of who's, how many people are watching what. That's a very big thing because with television, like they have to, those reported numbers, because Netflix has basically a corner on the market, in my opinion. They own their own information. They don't have to release it. So they can literally, the reason why I don't do that, I feel, is because that could help their competitor determine, okay, what type of shows and films do these people watch? Like, Netflix is very smart by not releasing it because they control the outcome. Like we were talking earlier before the show, like, there's a reason why House of Cards was made. There was a reason why Orange is the New Black was made. There's a reason why.
Well, and it down to the details is what you're really saying too. Yeah. Is that who was cast, for how much money they were willing to pay them?
Yeah.
You know, the production costs and values and all those things.
Yeah, it's like there's a reason why they picked Adam Sandler, because it says, oh well, most of, like, Adam Sandler's films are some of the most watched films on our streaming service. Well, like, there's a reason why they're going for those people, because they know what every type of person is watching. Like, they have I know one of the articles we reread was about, like, how they literally have so specific on the genres that you can look up on Netflix. Like, they are specific.
The Atlantic article we'll put in the show notes.
Yeah. It's like, you can literally find, like, any type of movie you want. They have that genre for it. And so they know what people are looking at. That's why it's almost like kind of Big Brother-esque, is that they know what you're watching and they won't tell you, and they're going to hold that information. And,
well, yeah, I mean, you know, to clarify a little bit though, like, from the user perspective, when I'm on Netflix, I was telling this to a friend earlier, you know, we were kind of talking, a side note, about like the how we discover new films. Mm-hmm. And if critics play any role in that. And I really don't tend, like, I go off of recommendations from friends. Mm-hmm. But even more than that, when I turn on Netflix and see things that are recommended above, like, a 4-star recommendation, right? Because it gives you, like, a, we think you'll like it this much, right? And I've been on and off subscribed to Netflix from college in, you know, 2003 or something, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a decade of ratings that I know, last time I checked, was up over like 1,000 ratings, right?
Yeah.
So it's really accurate. Like, if Netflix thinks I'm going to like something, like 5 stars, it's almost guaranteed that I'm going to enjoy watching it, right? Okay. And so from my perspective as a user, I don't, you know, it's not the same thing. I don't feel like it's the same thing as Facebook, right? Because they're not selling it to advertisers. They're using the data that they have about me and the ratings and when I leave a show, when I come back to a show, all of that information to just make the experience better, right? So, you know, I'm sure that Amazon is probably the closest at trying to do this same sort of thing as far as data analysis. Mm-hmm. And I think HBO, you know, is probably aiming in that direction with their app. But you have to think, they don't really give a breakdown that I've seen over, like, a difference in subscribers as far as digital or a traditional cable viewing. You can't glean this sort of data from a cable feed, right? I mean, you can do it from on demand. But they don't have the ratings. They don't have the huge catalog. Like when I get on HBO, I watch Last Week Tonight, you know, and I do have HBO right now as like a you know, special from Comcast or whatever for the first time ever that I've had HBO. And I don't really get on very much. But when I do, it's only for their content. Whereas Netflix, when I get on, they see my viewing habits across their original content and other people's content.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're just pulling from a bigger pool of data. And I, based on that Atlantic article, I have to think that they're in a very special position to where they see the industry in a way that no one else really can.
No.
Because
they're not.
There was a recent Script Notes episode. I'll have to go back and try and look up the exact one so we can put it in the show notes. But they talked about the people who the studios now hire that are kind of these data wizards who come in and try and tell the studio the same things that Netflix is kind of doing, where they say, okay, movies that have had male protagonists, you know, where they had to go and get a glowing orb did better than films where they had to go fight a witch, right? And of course, you know, Script Notes and Craig Mazin, you know, famously for his Umbridge, right? I mean, this is poppycock. You know, this is a horrific way to create content, to choose plot points based on very few data points over, like, previous studio releases, right? But with Netflix, I don't know that they're guessing as much as the studios might be at the script stage, right? Because with House of Cards, it's like we're getting David Fincher, Kevin Spacey, and then filling in the cast, and they know that it's worth this amount of money, and they know that it's worth two seasons guaranteed.
Yeah.
And it's a risk, but it's a calculated risk that I think they – I don't know, you know, I don't think they'll ever give away the secret sauce, right? But
no,
I think
they won't.
They know – down to, you know, okay, we're going to make an offer to Adam Sandler and we won't go over this number because we don't think we'll get more than this value out of it, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, all the other places are doing similar cost benefit analysis, right? But I think their analysis is so detailed and they're bidding with so many different people that they're at just a great advantage over some of these other places. Because if you remember House of Cards, when they talked about it, Spacey was on, I think, The Daily Show, and you know, he was saying, we shot this around everywhere. We took this to HBO,
and that,
but
yeah,
it was Netflix. Yeah, it was Netflix that made the offer for two seasons and the full shebang. They're like, whatever you want, however much money, you know, more or less, you know, not unlimited, but whatever you need, we want to make this happen.
Yeah. And you think, sorry, continue.
No, you.
Like, the thing is, like, with someone like Kevin Spacey and then David Fincher attached, you'd think it would have been picked up like that, but it wasn't, because they didn't know, like, other networks didn't know how to take it. They didn't know how to pitch it. They didn't know how to market it. But Netflix knew, hey, we look at our numbers. There's a market for this. Like, they literally know, they know the market. They can literally put that out there. And that's what anything they do, they know the market.
Yeah. I mean, they can assign, they can basically say, of our 50 million subscribers, we think this many people would potentially be interested or watch it. And, you know, if you look at their investor information, you know, they talk about it not in a, like, per show sort of way, but because they have television and film and kind of a mixture of things, they really just look at it at viewing hours, you know, viewing hours per user. And so it's like they I'm sure they have a number. I think this came up on Script Notes as well, but you know, basically it's like they know how much you kind of need to watch every month to keep you on as a subscriber, right? I mean, they know that you need to watch at least 5 hours or whatever it is before you're kind of like, you know, I just don't really use Netflix that much. I'll leave. Which kind of, I definitely want to put this in the show notes, which is a throwback, not to just basically quote Script Notes about episodes verbatim, but I keep coming back to this because I haven't found a source that really talks about this at all other than Script Notes, which is that it's episode 106, and I found the transcript, and it's John August, and he's saying that, you know, HBO did a study years ago where they figured out that they need one show, one or two shows, but one show that really hooks you as mm-hmm. a viewer to keep you.
Yeah.
People will not cancel HBO if they have Game of Thrones, or if they have Girls, or if they have
True Detective, or
Last
anything
Week
that's
Tonight,
or anything that's coming out.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, and you can see from HBO that they're clearly like they're targeting different markets with those shows, right? I mean, they're not making two Game of Thrones style shows. They're making one really violent fantasy medieval style, mm-hmm. you know, show that's huge, and then they're making Girls where. You know, when you look at the viewing numbers, like they're real, like Girls is way lower than Game of Thrones and cheaper to make, probably.
Yeah, clearly. It is.
But like it speaks to that audience in a way that those people will not cancel HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so Netflix is playing that similar game with their original content where they're like, we know that if we have exclusive original content from Judd Apatow and Adam Sandler
mm-hmm.
and these different sort of styles of comedy and different shows, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, you know, people will not leave or be less likely to leave, you know, if they feel like they can only get that through us.
Yeah, and then
and that's really interesting.
Then you add on top of that, like the big deals that like people kind of ignored kind of right now, because it's like, oh, Adam Sandler, oh, it's this. I mean, they just recently bought the licensing for Gotham to stream, so like Gotham, which is like one of the new big shows, they have the license to stream it online, not Amazon, not Hulu, no, it's Netflix. And they add a year ago when they made the whole deal with Marvel and then with Disney about how they were going to produce four shows and a web series just off Marvel superheroes, and they're taking their time with it too. That's another thing, they're taking their time with it.
Right,
other people would rush it and try to get it out, but that was a year ago they announced it. Daredevil, which is the first one on the lineup, isn't coming out till next year. And then after that, they make the deal where, hey, we will exclusively stream all of Disney's films, essentially, starting in 2016. Like, they...
Right.
Like, that, literally Disney, and this is a whole different podcast, Disney is probably, to me, the biggest, like, player in the film industry right now, like, studio-wise, because they own so much. And if Netflix makes
Pixar alone, right? If you could just make a deal as Netflix, if you could say we just want the Pixar library, at least for me, right?
Yeah.
Like if I could, because I have a kid, like if I could stream Pixar movies instead of buying them on iTunes, like I would never leave Netflix ever, right? Because I've spent like $100 on
renting and buying Pixar films. But then, that, then you have, and the thing is, it's not just that. Then a year or two down the road, you have more Marvel films, more like Avengers and Iron Man or whatever, Captain America. And then you add not just that, then you add Star Wars, and every Star Wars film of possibly being a Star Wars film every year or a spinoff every other year. And then you add not just that, you add the Pixar, then you add. Also, too, people forget is that Steven Spielberg with DreamWorks, Disney has like a 30-picture deal to distribute all of Spielberg and DreamWorks films. They literally, and Netflix made that deal with them because they know that Disney has the big, like, franchise things. They have the moneymakers. Right. I mean, and Netflix made that deal to do it. It wasn't Amazon, it wasn't Hulu. And that's
another. A key thing about that deal, though, that I, you know, because I looked that back up, and we can show that in the not to keep saying show notes over and over, but show notes.
Show notes.
You know, the Wall Street Journal, they reported that you know, that deal with Disney was signed in late 2012.
Yeah.
Right? 2 years ago. And it's not even going to start until 2016.
Yeah.
So I think a key thing is this is kind of like the sports deals that you see with ESPN and Fox Sports 1 and CBS and all this, where these content deals, and this is really pretty unique to film and television compared to music and a lot of other entertainment, is that these deals are really long term, and they're geographically or based on territory, you know, right?
Yeah.
So these deals, I mean, Netflix can be a much smaller company in 2012, you know, subscriber base and revenue stream, but they're like, look, we're going to bet that by 2016, this $300 million deal is going to be worth it. And I don't know from Disney's perspective, I mean, that's just what it says it's valued at. I don't know how Disney structured it. I'm sure it's, you know, complicated and worthwhile to them. But you would almost think like, man, their growth, Netflix's growth as a company for the length of this Disney deal, I mean, if it is $300 million, that is not that much money for the level of content that they're going to get. Because you think about if they had to go out and produce these on their own, like, that's a steal compared to original content. And I think that's kind of a difference in the TV realm that's more difficult to kind of parse out and understand, is that a lot of these TV shows, because they're tied up with older legacy companies, you know, cable companies and things, they like for example, HBO is not going to make a deal with Netflix. I mean, it could happen, I guess, but there's like not a price that HBO is willing to part with them that would be worth it to them, you know, because it would be eating their lunch. They'd be taking away from the one thing that really they have valuable. So that's like, there's examples of that all across the industry, and I think that's what's forced HBO into this position a little bit, partially through choice, but also being forced into making their own content. It's like, you know, from their perspective, if they're spending, like, the reported budgets that I've seen or heard for House of Cards is, you know, several million dollars per episode, right? You know, so $2-3 million across, what is it, 12 episodes a season? And they're on... I'm showing my... I bailed on season two. I'm going to go... I know people... No spoilers. I mean, people die. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, there's like, what, 12 episodes. So, you know, that's... Let's say they've spent $50 to $75 million making and promoting it, right?
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money. But from their perspective, it's like, okay, we own it now. Like, that basically, if you think about 2012, like... you know, they're basically weighing the deal with Disney. They sign it. They don't get the content until 2016. Yep. But with House of Cards, you sign the deal, you get everyone involved, and you start making it, and then you can release it faster than some of these long-term contracts are up for a renewal.
Yeah.
Right? And then the other key thing that's really critical for Netflix is that they own it exclusively, but also... they own it in perpetuity because it's theirs. Yeah. A lot of the things that there's actually, I didn't put this in the notes, but I can add it, is Six Colors. One of the guys that I listen to a lot of tech podcasts, right? And a guy that was a reporter, Jason Snell. I hope I'm getting that right. Anyway, Apple reporter. Basically, he started his own thing now, and he was talking about... he wrote an article that became popular, you know, on social media about people. The problem with streaming services is that you lose content. You never know when, you know, Netflix is going to lose the deal to have Battlestar Galactica. I think that was his example, right? Of like, what if you're a person and you're in the middle of watching Battlestar Galactica, and one day you log in and all of a sudden it's gone, right? It's this terrible. It's the end of your world.
It's the end of the world. Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, I've lost Battlestar Galactica.
Which, I don't, you know, whatever. I understand his point, right? I'm not trying to make fun of the argument necessarily. It's just that people want these things to be like their library. That's what he was comparing it to. It's like, well, when I own a DVD, I don't lose it, right? I mean, I own the film. But when you're renting, you know, you never really know if it's going to be there day to day.
Yeah.
But... you know, that point aside, like, with their original content, with these Adam Sandler movies and Judd Apatow show and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, they will never lose that. You know, that will always be in the Netflix library available. And so there's just some really interesting things at play for them business-wise, where I think, you know, they're weighing out, like, okay, if we make it ourselves, we have to pay up front, but we have this long-term... like, they can remove the headache of every year having to renegotiate these contracts, or every other year, or in the case of Disney, you know, every 5 years or whatever, right?
It's like, they have it all in house. They'll have it in house.
As they grow, like, if they make it themselves, they capture all the upside. You know, if they grow bigger, it doesn't cost them any more to really stream it. It's basically, you know, There's the technology cost of it, but that's not the big part. It's the content that costs so much. But as they grow, every time they come to the table to negotiate with these content owners, these studios and networks that own Gotham or whatever, you know, they're like, hey, we want... supposedly the Gotham deal, the Deadline article said that it was valued at like $1.75 million an episode.
Yeah.
Right? And that, you know,
You're looking at, if it's 22 episodes, you're looking at, I mean, about, oh gosh, you're looking at $44 million.
So under, yeah, under 50. At max. We'll just round it.
Yeah, 44. Yeah. Is my roundup.
But, you know, it's this, so I think we can turn, I want to turn the conversation just a little bit.
No, that's fine.
Because we can get in the numbers and the particulars of all, you know, all these shows. But I think what's interesting is my question, you know, kind of as a we'll call ourselves up and coming content maker, right?
Yeah.
to be generous to ourselves.
I'm more of an aspiring person than you are because I'm a little bit younger.
Yeah.
But yes.
Well, and you're in LA, right? So it's like, okay, so how does this change the industry, right? And mm-hmm. I don't. This is kind of an open question that I would love, you know, feedback on.
Yeah.
We can do this at the end of the show, but I'll do my Twitter. Do you have a Twitter handle?
I do have a Twitter. I guess I do have a Twitter.
So my Twitter is at Suite22. SUITE. So not like a cupcake, but like a building location. And then the number is 22. You like that? Suite22? I'll do mine later. Okay. All right. I guess I'm desperate for Twitter followers. I don't know.
I guess you are better.
But the question is, how does this change the broader industry, right? Because what you notice, or what I notice in these deals, is that it's headline, big name, established brands, right? Judd yes. Apatow, huge name. Adam Sandler. Some people are writing articles saying, you know, are they catching Adam Sandler on the way down? You know, like, is it a dumb buy for Netflix because yeah. Adam Sandler has been played out, right? But you can definitely say that he's a very established brand. I mean, there's almost yes. nothing that would make him bigger than he already is. You know, this Disney content deal, Marvel, right? They're going after just these huge prestige yeah. buys. Mm-hmm. And a cool thing that I learned this week and kind of researching around is if you go on Netflix.com, like on your computer, not on the phone or the iPad, I tried it on those and it doesn't work, but on the computer, mm-hmm. when you type in just Netflix into the search field, it shows you all of their original content, which is not a ton, right?
Yeah.
But it shows you all of them, you know, kind of ordered or whatever. You see the list of them, right?
Yeah.
And they have shows that I'd actually never heard of, right? Mm-hmm. They don't just have, you know, House of Cards,
Orange and the New Black. Yeah. They have
right.
more.
And Lilyhammer was their first, right? That nobody kind of, I don't know many people that watch it, but I mean, right? It was their first move yes. that really didn't get him nearly as far as, you know, House of Cards. And actually, I just opened up the window and there's a new series that popped up here that says Peaky Blinders. That's an original. Anyway, so they have these other originals, and some of them, you know, to diverge just a little bit again, is that some mm-hmm. of them are not really originals in the way that we're talking about House of Cards, where they're, you know, making it from scratch as far as they are putting all the money in and maybe splitting it with a production company or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're also listing like Derek, which is actually, you know, from the UK. They have quite a few shows from the UK.
Yeah,
that they're just licensing. I mean, I don't think they're really like originals in the way that they're talking about the others. So I started watching Southcliffe the other night, right? So they have these other shows that are pretty much the same thing that Hulu's doing, where they just license.
They license them, yeah, and they release them in the States.
But what, even I guess to stay on as best I can stay on target, Star Wars reference. You know, it's even with the original content, you can definitely tell that they're not taking an Amazon strategy or a Hulu strategy or a YouTube strategy, kind of, you know, maybe descending down from levels of intelligence, or maybe not levels of intelligence. That's condescending. There are different approaches, right? Netflix yes. is very much taking a very high-end HBO. We only have the very, very best things that we even put the Netflix brand on, mm-hmm. right? The things that they list as originals are of the highest quality that they can afford, right? Or, well, it's not even about that. It's just, it's high quality is what they want you to associate with the brand Netflix, mm-hmm. right? And there's only, you know, you scroll through the page, there's like 30 things that they list as originals, right? But when you go, you know, kind of the other approach from Amazon is more this hodgepodge of let everybody vote on it. You know, they're going to be definitely like they're going to spread the budgets around. It's a little more kind of grassroots. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to get sidetracked necessarily on all the different ones and not talk about them fairly because they all have their own, you know, pros and cons, right? But it's just interesting that as basically anyone who's not a major name, like you probably are not going to be on Netflix in a way that's positive because the information that I've seen about the way that they license content from smaller filmmakers is that you basically get nothing. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I saw an article that said that it was a filmmaker got like $1,000 to license their film for a year. Right. And maybe you could say that it's just not a very good movie and they were not going to sell any DVDs to begin with. I don't know, but it's definitely not.
But the thing is, like, if it's a hit on Netflix, they literally still just make that $1,000, whatever that original deal was. It's not box office gross anymore. It's not the amount of rentals it's been. It's not anything. It's literally Netflix actually will make probably more money off of that because of the amount of traffic they're getting on that one thing. But the filmmaker, it helps his name or helps his or her name, but it doesn't actually put money in their pocket.
Right. And the quote from the article, I think I put it in the notes, is that, the guy said that, torrenting and pirating helps spread your name. You know, if that's all you're in this for, there's a lot of ways to do that. I think people want to be attached to the Netflix brand, though. Like,
they do.
Independent films want to say, like, I'm on Netflix, even though that's probably eating away at other ways that they could be making money if the way that they're trying to make money is through sales, you know, which kind of, I think what we'll end up having to end up do here is we'll have to come back to, I have a couple friends I think we need to talk to, and hopefully we can get some of their perspective of, you know, the model, the business model of
how selling Netflix goes and
getting
down.
With
independent filmmakers,
right? And because you have these other avenues of Vimeo on demand, competitor, you know, VHX, and so there's different ways to sell directly to people, and then there's obviously the kind of funded at the beginning through Kickstarter approach that a lot of people have been doing. But as a viewer of film and television, I love Netflix, right?
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic for, I only watch a couple hours, I don't know, a week or whatever, right? But when I sit down, I find stuff I like. But as far as how it's shaping the industry, there's a whole lot of questions that remain that I don't know how other people are going to compete. And that's what's going to be interesting because they control the data in a completely opaque way where they do not share it. So there's no box office numbers. There's no rating numbers. I assume that people involved in the productions have some idea of how successful House of Cards is, or whatever, but they're not sharing that other than probably through the grapevine, right? There's very little like awareness as how things are actually working. And I think even HBO, because I've seen numbers for like viewership of like an episode of Girls, right? And they can compare that to broadcast television, and it's way lower than broadcast television. But there's at least numbers, right? And they and we don't have that with Netflix. And I don't think we ever will. We will never know how any of this stuff does. The only information we'll get will be subscriber numbers and profitability. I've been ranting for a while. Go ahead.
That's all we're going to get because it's like they know the outcome of the game. They're not telling anyone what it is. Like they know everything that needs to be known. And with like Netflix, it's just and also too that I'm noticing too, looking at their list of programming, they're creating original content and they're licensing content, but they're like bringing back old shows that had a following,
right?
Like you're looking at like Arrested Development with season 4, and there's the talk of another season after that. And then they brought like The Killing. They like to end off the series. They brought in Killing for another season. they brought in, it's a Star Wars, a Clone Wars, for like basically Netflix is becoming a place where like cult followed shows almost that get canceled too soon can get one more shot at continuing the story. And that happens a lot. That happens a lot in the television market. And the thing is, like, they're basically making money off another network's mistake or something. Like, they are literally...
That's what's interesting. Well, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm about to go into a tangent. Continue. What were you going to say?
Well, no, it's just interesting because, you know, you just said that it's the network's mistake. But that's what's so interesting is that it's from a network's perspective, like, they have to cancel Arrested Development because it's not getting that many viewers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not – a key thing that we can talk about, you know, later down the road is that all these cable – the premium cable channels, especially the channels that have kind of come up in prominence the past five to 10 years, you know, like especially what AMC – has Mad Men, right? And then also, this is going to reveal how little television I actually watch, so I'm potentially very unqualified. But Breaking Bad is also AMC, right?
Yeah, but yeah, you had like AMC. They had Breaking Bad. They had they have Mad Men. They have Walking Dead. They had The Killing. Yeah. They've had.
But I mean, what was AMC 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they were just old movies.
Yeah, they were.
Right? They were nothing. And so what they figured out, and I think this is what's led to what people call kind of the golden age of television, which we can, you know, that's a topic unto itself. But
yeah,
is all these premium channels figured out the kind of the HBO thing where, okay, we need one show, just one show that people cannot do without. And if we get that, then when we come to the negotiating table with the cable companies to renew our contract to have AMC as part of the channel lineup, we can say, look, if you want us and you want Breaking Bad, not AMC, but if you want Breaking Bad for your viewers, you know, your subscribers, you got to pay us way more, you know, whatever the number is. And then what you've seen is different cable companies struggling to keep costs down, and they'll say, hey, we're not going to pay you. And then what happens, right, is if it was just a channel, if AMC was just a channel of old movies like they used to be, no one's really going to scream and cry. You know, people might get upset. But if you don't have Breaking Bad as part of your cable subscription, people are going to be like, hey, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on? They get mad about that. And that's the same thing that the sports channels figured out, you know, a long time ago as they get into these battles over, hey, I want to see the game right now, and I don't care what it costs, even though, you know, it's a catch-22 for the cable companies, which we can get into, but they have to keep paying more for the content and then raising their rates, and then people are like, I don't want to pay this much for cable, but I really want Breaking Bad. Yeah, anyway, it's an interesting, maybe to wrap up a little bit, I think we've got multiple topics to come back to.
Yes, we do.
As far as how independent filmmakers make money through Vimeo or... Mm-hmm. Definitely, I don't know how to keep talking about it, but the data that Netflix is scraping and understanding about us and how that changes the way content is made, at least for them, right? Mm-hmm. Because we were talking about how they pick the people who are even in the films and TV shows. And then the other one is I'm going to make this. This isn't really a prediction because I'm in no place to make any sort of valuable prediction that someone should care about. But I definitely think that based on the way things are going, that the current like golden age, as people are talking about it, where all these different stations, AMC, HBO, Netflix, and tons of other
You're adding like WGN is starting to produce original content, like a network that like wasn't even known for, they were just doing like daytime movies or like syndication stuff, and they're producing original content, and we'll end up seeing more of that within probably the next 5 years.
And I think that the like some people are going to be late to the game, and I would say that it's not sustainable. Like, it's not going to keep going. That's a little doomy and gloomy. But I mean, Netflix is going to keep making their original content. Their business model works. But for a lot of these channels who are trying to jump into the original content game now, they're just going to have a tougher time, I think, going to the cable companies and saying, look, we're WGN. We got this new original show.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cable companies are hurting to keep people on board. And like right now, when I said I have HBO, the reason I have HBO is because I called Comcast to say I want to cancel. And they were like, hey,
we'll what give if you we HBO. Give you all...
Yeah, they were, no, we no, no, this is what channels. They said. This is, yeah, this is, it's like, we're going to give you all the channels and HBO and the internet you want for like $80-something a month, $89 a month, which... Mm-hmm. They've tacked on some other stuff, and I'm getting ready to call them back and say, no, this is not going to work. So anyway, when you look at the bill, though, they want to charge me like, $160-something, but they're eating the cost of HBO. They're eating the cost of some of these other things. And so they're in a strange position where they would rather keep me even if I'm not very valuable just because it looks terrible for them to lose a customer, right? And yeah. And that's a whole nother show. We probably got it. You said you wanted 30 minutes. So I think we're over that limit. But
yeah, but no, but yeah, it's the Netflix stuff is something you can talk about forever because it's literally changing the industry. Because 10 years ago, Netflix wasn't around. Like right. 10 years ago, it was. I think it's still an idea. It's only been around for a short time. And they're still cornering the market. Because like, for example, Redbox is their only really rental competition was streaming for like a year or two, and then they've stopped streaming because they can't compete with Netflix. It wasn't successful because Netflix knows how to. They were the first of the game. They knew how to do it, and they made enough headway and money to where they could do their own stuff. And that's the big thing with anyone with networks is creating their own original content because they own that content. They don't have to. It's not syndicated. They own that content. But yeah.
Well, and we'll wrap up. But another interesting thing that works for Netflix compared to Redbox that I think Redbox had a hard time with is the fact that Redbox was known as and still is known as like the really cheap way to rent movies, movies. All the studios were upset because it's like, we don't think you should be able to rent our films for $1. And they were trying to like blacklist Redbox from buying their films wholesale. Because they thought it was unfair, right? Whereas Netflix has always had a subscription model. And so when you remember some of the freakouts a while ago, and we can go back to that again in another episode, but I was originally a DVD-only subscriber, right? And then they added digital, and then Reed Hastings tried to split the company. You remember that? And so
that's happened a few times, not just one time, but continue.
Well, it's just like their business model, they were able to transition, right? They were able to go from, okay, you pay us every month for DVDs, now pay us, a little extra and you'll also get streaming. And I think that's probably the interesting thing to go back to at some point is how they made, like at what times they made those transitions. And now you can't even get DVDs, right? Am I wrong?
You can still get DVDs.
Okay.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, I'm pretty sure that they're winding that down. If you look at their financials, it's like they used to have tons of revenue from DVDs, and now it's just almost nothing. They're not marketing it. They have no marketing expense for DVDs. It's all instant. And for Redbox, it's like the jump from, hey, come to us when you're bored and pay $1 to, hey, this whole new thing that's completely different than how you've ever interacted with us, I guess other than reserving DVDs to their website. But if you get online, you can stream stuff from us. But it's kind of like Netflix, but we don't have any original content. We have all the same cost that Netflix has, and we don't have any of the underlying infrastructure and technology. Yeah, I mean, it's just they're at a huge disadvantage. Like, we'll talk about this later because this will keep going on and on.
Thank you guys for tuning in. Any last words, Ben Gertz?
I've had a blast doing this, and I look forward to following up on some of this stuff. Definitely.
Yeah, this is something we can talk about for a while.
It's not necessarily about Twitter followers. I would just love feedback from anybody who knows more than I do, because clearly a lot of this stuff is speculative, and I think there's a lot of cool stuff to explore. But I look forward to it, Brandon, and I think you can definitely have some other guests on to talk about actual what's going on in theaters, because like I said, I don't actually get out that much.
Thank you, Ben Gertz, but it's always good to have your opinion. Ben said his Twitter handle earlier. Mine is at @BCS_thefilmkid. There you go. You can find me on Twitter. Send me any thoughts.
He's not going for short Twitter handles, people.
No,
he's verbose.
Yeah, I have long Twitter handles. We hope you guys enjoyed this. Hopefully we'll be back soon with a new topic. This is a topic we could talk about for days on end, and I'm sure we'll come back to it in the near future. So I'd like to thank you guys for tuning in to Cine Nation, presented by The Media Machine, which you can follow on, like us on Facebook. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll talk to you later.